Welcome back at WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. All of our WNST coverage brought to you by our friends at Liberty Pure. I'm wearing the gear here. Oh, it's on this side. Yeah, I'm left-right sensitive on the new screen here. Going to get together with Doug Workman a little later on in the week and do a little well water examination of my property at Towson. So you can certainly do that at 800-CLEAN-WATER and Liberty Pure Solutions as well. As our friends at Wise Market, Wise Conversations, and tried to have some wise conversations last week. Luke Jones joins us now here from our Baltimore Positive WNST team. Luke, I thought I'd get out in front of the draft and invite Peter King on early and have a long conversation with our mutual friend, Jeff Srebeck. Srebeck and I went 49 minutes about all things draft, and like 46 minutes in, I'm like, they're not dealing Orlando Brown, right? Like, we're not even going to talk about that, right? And sure enough, I mean, I think I talked to Gary Davenport about it last week as well, and Brent Sobleski. I've had some good guests on. Mike Tenier's coming on this week. But the Orlando Brown thing, as much as we gave it some oxygen, certainly to come out of the blue on a Friday afternoon before the draft and make a very sort of exotic deal leads me to never, ever, 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 ever again sleep on Eric DaCosta.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't think it was out of the blue as much as you just looked at it. You looked at where the Ravens were, the fact that this is a championship contending team, which still gives me reservations about this deal. I'm not nearly as enthralled with this deal as your initial reaction was, at least what I saw you posted on social media Friday evening. But I didn't hate it either. But I think it is very much a lesson on never say never. I think it's a lesson on, not that I think Orlando Brown was going to be a malcontent, but you always run that risk, especially if the team gets off to a so start. And
I'm a new age guy, Luke. I don't like guys on my team that don't want to be on my team, and especially when they're out snotting out about it on social media. Well, you know, I that's just how I feel. I've run a company for 30 years. I've never found a benefit in having that kind of cat around. After you win 12 games, after you win 14 games, after you play left tackle, you're a year away from going and getting your own deal. You're playing in your father's legacy here. You're playing in a good organization that no one's ever asked out of. You know, I've been on a lot of dates. You know what I'm saying? Like, all my dates usually go well. If a girl doesn't want to be on the date, go wash your hair. Literally, that's my feeling about it at this point. And I just found it to be very untoward as a fan, as a guy that covers the team, as a guy that's been around Orlando Brown, like since he ran five, whatever it was in Indianapolis 3 years ago. I'm just sort of like, okay, you know, I mean, I wouldn't let that run my team. And if I could go sign a veteran player, get a draft pick, you know, save some money. Cause if you weren't going to sign him and he wasn't going to be happy, it's more than about the player or the film or the offense or any of that. It really feels to me like the Ravens were offended. That's what it feels. Or really, love you. We'll deal you someplace good. But if they loved him that much, they wouldn't have sent him to Kansas City. That's my feeling about it.
Fair enough. I'll say, you know, if that's true, then Ray Lewis got traded in 2006, didn't he? Ray Lewis clearly wanted out in Baltimore at one point in time. So, I don't know so much about the whole, you know, over the top being a malcontent or anything like that. Everything about Orlando.
But the Ravens wanted Ray Lewis. That's the difference.
Well, okay. And we're also talking about a Hall of Fame player compared to a guy who's been a two-time Pro Bowl selection. So, okay, here's the thing with me.
He's a kid that should have probably done his job if he wanted to stay here. If you don't want to be here.
Done his job? All he did was do his job.
Go to the right tackle position and play this year. If you want to play on my team, that's what you have to do. There is no left tackle job here. So if you don't want that, we'll find a deal for you. And they did. And I think you move on. But yeah, my heart's not bleeding over Orlando. Like, I don't think they're a worse football team for having dealt him on the face of it at all. I think they're going to have a hell of a draft because of this.
Okay. That remains to be seen. They're a worse football team right now. How can you say they're not? They just traded a two-time Pro Bowl tackle. We don't know who they're going to draft. Now, if they hit on that pick, then great. If they find a right tackle that's going to be their guy for the next 4 or 5 years, then great. By all means, it's a smashing success. But They could draft Matt Elam. They could draft Rashad Perriman. They could draft O'Neal Cousins, you know, Adam Terry. You know, there's no guarantee.
Orlando Brown could go to Kansas City and get $140 million and be a very middling left tackle on a really good team.
Do we really have to do this, though? Like, and I'm not saying you. I've seen a lot of this on social media. When Orlando Brown said he wanted to be traded, all anyone said was what? Oh, nothing short of a first-round pick am I trading this guy. I mean, he's a two-time Pro Bowl selection, and Ronnie Stanley's coming off of an injury. But then when he gets traded, everyone's saying, oh, he's not that good. It's because of Lamar Jackson and this offensive line, the system.
I'm shocked somebody overvalued him in that way.
Why is he overvalued? Why is he overvalued, though?
You gave away a pick. You're going to have to sign him, and you're going to have to play him at left tackle.
He played at a really high level at left tackle last year. I mean, this is what I'm talking about, though. I just feel like as soon as the Ravens deal the guy,
I'm not a fan of guys that want to be dealt. And when they want to be dealt, clearly Eric DaCosta had no problem.
But you're
accommodating him if someone overpaid. Someone overpaid. I mean, I love the deal. I don't. That's how I feel about it. Honestly,
okay. I mean, that's fine.
I don't jump up and down about a lot of trades. You and I have been at this a little. We've known each other a decade. I don't know that we've ever been this far apart on our joyometer.
I don't dislike it. First of all, they didn't fleece the Chiefs. When you look at this deal from a standpoint, first of all, this isn't Orlando Brown for a first round pick. Let's not make it too simplistic because it's not that. They traded a second round pick. They got and him. The 2022 picks that swap a fifth and a sixth, I don't care about that. You know, let's look at the picks in Orlando Brown this year. So you trade Orlando Brown, you trade the 58th overall pick. In return, you get the first round pick from Kansas City. It's 31st overall. Then you get 94 and the fourth round pick, which was 136. So if you really look at it from a value standpoint, they didn't really get a first round pick. If you want to look at it on a simplistic level, their 58th pick, they were able to move up 27 spots. And then they were able to get a third and a fourth. You can kind of look at that from a standpoint of, you know, they most likely, if he has a good season in Baltimore as the right tackle, he's going to get big money from somebody. He's going to be a third round comp pick. So you get that third round comp pick 2 years earlier. So the value that they netted, and look, I want to be very clear about this, because I'm not doing cartwheels about this, doesn't mean that I think they made a bad deal. I think it's a fair deal in terms of compensation. My argument from way back in February, and this is where I'm being consistent, and this is where I've seen some people, not you, I mean just in general, some of the reaction that we tend to do when someone gets traded away, we kind of say, oh, great deal, this guy wasn't as good as everyone thinks, and you know, yada, yada, yada. But when you kind of look at this in terms of what the value was, you know, the Jimmy Johnson chart, a lot of teams seem to think is kind of outdated at this point. You have some other trade value charts.
Years old now, right?
Yeah, but there's different values. So when you look at the net value that they got, the most optimistic, I don't want to say optimistic, just the charts, certain charts say they got the value of roughly a late first round pick. The Jimmy Johnson chart, I think, you know, has them, it would be the number of points equal to the 46th pick in the draft. So somewhere in the neighborhood of late first round to mid second round pick. So in those terms, understanding, yes, he's a two-time Pro Bowl right tackle, left tackle. We can debate that whole thing. Understanding he's in a contract year. So let's not forget Orlando Brown playing football in 2021, whether it's for the Ravens or for the Chiefs. That still has value. We tend to, because a player is going to be a free agent after, you know, he's going into a contract year, I feel like sometimes we overlook the fact that that player playing that season still has plenty of value, especially if you're looking at the Ravens from a standpoint of your all-pro left tackles coming off of a serious ankle injury that required two surgeries, and oh yeah, has never played 16 games in a season even before that. So let's at least acknowledge that much. But to go back to it, I think they got fair compensation. I don't think it was a bad deal. I don't really buy the whole the Ravens fleece Kansas City, or I've seen Chiefs fans saying they fleece the Ravens. I think it was a fair trade in that way. My argument was, because this is a team that, let's face it, anything less than going to the Super Bowl next year, it's got to be a disappointment at this point. I mean, we're going into year four of Lamar Jackson. They were 14-2 2 years ago. They were 11-5 last year. If you don't get to the Super Bowl, you know, short of Lamar getting hurt week two and missing half the season or worse, it's a disappointment. I mean, that's just where they are right now. And I think the Ravens would acknowledge that. They're not, they wouldn't hide from that at this point. So my question is, looking at this offense in its totality now, wide receiver, we talked about that over and over and over, and we'll see what they do on Thursday night, Friday night. There's certainly options in the first and second round that would be attractive to them. You know, if they trade, you know, trade their second first round pick that they now have, move back into the second round, pick up a couple extra picks and, you know, round three, four, whatever they try to do. But so much of the debate with wide receiver, and you and I've talked about this a lot, was either you need a significant upgrade or you say, well, they don't really throw the ball a whole lot. How much is that really worth to them? Okay, fair enough. If you believe the latter, that's fine. Well, then the offensive line's really important, right? And we talked about this a lot last year. Well, you got Kevin Zeitler. Okay, you've solidified right guard, but now what's going to happen at right tackle? And, you know, sorry, Alejandro Villanueva or Dennis Kelly, I think they're nice insurance policies. I think they're nice short-term answers in terms of saying, okay, they could begin the year as the right tackle in the way that James Hurst did a few years ago when Zeus was a rookie and then Orlando took over halfway through the season. But I'm now looking at that and saying, okay, we said over and over going into the offseason, they need to make the offensive line better. That's a question mark still, even with Kevin Zeitler. So yeah, they have the 27th and 31st overall picks. If you tell me right now those are both going to be great picks, then great, groovy. I mean, of course this is a successful trade, but we also know late first round, that's not a guarantee either. So this goes
well,
back
you're
to
about
what
to call Orlando Brown a great pick then, right?
What, Orlando Brown?
As a draft pick, yes.
In the third round, of course, he was a fantastic pick. So this goes back to, this is very clearly a move geared toward the future. I mean, it's all about the future, right? I mean, these picks.
Well, the future was you weren't going to sign him anyway, and you weren't going to give him that money. So to your point, given the 16 games away, what's the value in that for them?
A lot, I'd still say. I mean, a lot, because if Ronnie Stanley, we don't know where he is right now. I mean, John Harbaugh said a couple times he's on schedule. I mean, you know, no offense against John Harbaugh, but we need to see how he looks until anyone from an outside perspective can really gain that. And I'm
well,
sure
if they felt like Orlando Brown was going to be their left tackle the first month of the season, they wouldn't have made this deal.
Oh, well, I agree with that. Sure. But at the same time, there's knowing that Ronnie Stanley's not going to be ready for the season. And there's the question of how effective is he? Does he have any kind of setback? Those types of questions. The fact that he gets nicked up almost on a yearly basis where he misses at least a game or two anyway before this major injury. So, you know, I just keep coming back to, this is a team that has high expectations. This is a team that has aspirations for a Super Bowl. Yes, this is from a long-term hypothetical value standpoint. Yeah, it's a no-brainer. I'm not going to disagree with you on that. I guess my point is I still have value and concern with a Pro Bowl caliber player no longer being on your offensive line now. And sure, you can look at this draft and you can look at offensive tackles. And, you know, if someone, I don't know how realistic it is, but say Tevin Jenkins from Oklahoma State, if he's there at 27, which I'm not sure he's going to be, quite frankly, but if you can draft someone like him and plug and play, and he's your starting right tackle, and he plays at a level at least close to Orlando Brown would have in 2021, then great. But you also know with offensive line play in this league and also not knowing what spring workouts are going to look like at this point, who's going to show up, what exactly they're going to do, training camp and you know how that's going to work. I assume training camp will be fairly normal if we assume vaccines and everything continues to go in a good direction.
Spring workouts, that's crazy to think that that's going to be a productive thing here for anyone in the league over the next couple of weeks.
Okay, fair enough. But then that really matters when you're talking about a young offensive lineman that you're going to plug and play, right? So again, long-term, this, of course it makes sense. And I'm not going to, from a long-term standpoint, I'm not going to bash it because I know they weren't going to re-sign Orlando Brown. But for how much you value their chances of winning in 2021, that's where, you know, it's fair to have a little bit of concern there. So it doesn't mean they're not going to win a Super Bowl or they can't win a Super Bowl, but whoever they're going to draft to replace Orlando Brown right now, I'm still going to bet on Orlando Brown being a better player right now than whoever that is stepping in. And that's the question here. So, you know, in terms of the value, and that's why I said at the beginning of the offseason when this first came out, and I wrote this at BaltimorePositive.com, I'm being consistent here in how I'm talking about this. That's why at my position at that point in time was, if I'm going to deal him, I want to be blown away. I wasn't blown away by this trade. I think it was a fair trade, and that's fine. You know, ultimately, we haven't gotten into the idea of hypothetically you traded the team you've been chasing the last 3 years and address their biggest need. So,
well, that's where I jump in on this. And I say, you don't give the Yankees pitching if you believe in the pitch.
Sure.
Right. And for that reason, I don't have any information on this. I have not talked to Eric. I haven't talked to John. I don't have bonbons with the team. My gut, and this is 25 years into this, is they didn't like that kid as much as he liked himself. And you know what I mean? Like to me, it was like you could deal him to the gates of hell if you choose, right? Like, yeah. And they dealt him to a good place, and that's why I was kind of flipping on Friday. My first thought was, do they like him or do they hate him? Because they sent him to a really nice place. You know what I mean? They sent him someplace good after being a malcontent or whatever. To your point, it was all about getting the best deal. They got the they would have sent him to the LA Chargers, the San Diego Chargers, the London Chargers, they would have sent him anywhere to get the right draft pick. So they got the most they could get. But the extra worm on this is Kansas City Radio's calling me and wants me on this week and saying, hey, what do we get from what do we fleeced the Ravens? We got a 2-time Pro Bowl, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure the Ravens are like, okay, that's our offense. That's good. That's nice. He doesn't want to be here. If we're going to get real value, let's take real value. We'll say all the right things. We'll wear his jersey. We'll talk about his dad. But, like, we're not really afraid of him beating us in Kansas City. Matter of fact, we'd like to go chase Patrick Mahomes with him back there. I think it's closer to that than, oh, boy, we love him so much and so much for his. If they loved him that much, they wouldn't have traded him. That is, at the end of the day, for me, I think they are. This feels like a good riddance. We'll move on. Have fun, kid. We'll take the draft picks and we're just going to go play football because that's what we do. Because I think there is. If Eric DaCosta was offended by us asking him about his wide receiver, how offended do you think when a kid that whose father I knew and who he knew comes in the door, puts his feet up and says, I'm really a left tackle. You know, I know all you guys did for me here and all that. And I know we've won a lot and I know you want to win and all, but I want to get paid. You know, that's how it feels to me from here. And now that I've seen it play out, it doesn't feel like Earl Thomas. That's a different level, but it feels like, you know, Zeus, maybe you're not one of our kind of guys here. Maybe it's better you go to Kansas City.
Maybe.
We respect you, and we know what a great left tackle you'll be, and we would have given you the money, but we already gave it to him. It feels very like that to me. And again, I have no – I wish I had more information, but I don't, so I'm guessing. But that's my guess from downtown, and that's all I can do when I'm not in the building, right?
Yeah, I mean – I still think that element, I'm not buying that element of it nearly as much. I mean, they gave Ronnie Stanley $98.5 million. I mean, you're not paying two offensive tackles that much money. And he wants to play left tackle. He can talk, and I want to be very sensitive about this. I lost my father at a young age. He was much younger than I was. So I understand that connection, that bond, that, you know, when you lose a father at a young age, you know, that hold it has on you. And I can't even imagine doing something at such a high profile level that he does playing in the NFL, following in the footsteps of his father's craft. But it's obviously a financial element here. I mean, come on. We don't have to. We're not being offensive toward Orlando Brown Jr. to acknowledge that. So I don't have any problem with a player saying that. I don't think it's necessarily a case where he's even a malcontent. I think it's a case where he asked. I think the Ravens, knowing that he's going to be gone after a year, and they're trying to weigh that. I don't think it's necessarily
privately. You don't ask on Instagram. If he asked to be dealt, like Hayden Hurst apparently asked to be dealt, right? Like we find that out after the trade's made.
But did he say anything that was disrespectful though? I mean, you're looking at
that you don't want to be here when you're on the team is disrespectful. Like it just is.
Isn't it disrespectful when the Ravens cut players for salary cap purposes every year? I mean, at some point in time, we need to move beyond this. Just looking at it from the team perspective.
I'm looking at it from both sides. If you don't want to play on my team, I'll send you to Kansas City.
But it's fine. But you're implying that, you know, that he's kind of being a jerk. And aren't the Ravens jerks when they cut Mark Ingram?
Years, I mean, nobody's ever asked out of here. Especially
that's not exactly true, but okay.
Well,
I've already given you the greatest player in the history of the franchise wanted to be traded at one point. I mean, come on,
he was
man.
Wrong. He clearly made a mistake.
But you just said it though, and I just gave you like the best example ever that's hasn't been 100% true. Your general point is spot on.
He meant that about as much as Ed Reed meant.
But at the same time, how many guys left though because they got paid more money elsewhere? You know, I mean,
dude, I feel like we're devolving into this thing I don't want to be, which is this, a Kardashian reaction, like covering the NBA about, you know, who's doing what, saying what on the internet. I mean, I don't care about any of that. I care that they play football. And especially from the Ravens perspective, I know they do too. And I think they feel much more than you. And again, I wish I could sit here and say I'm inside it and I know, but I know these people pretty well. I've known Eric DaCosta more than half my life. The fact that the deal happened to the level it happened and they got what they got, which I call it a fleecing. You could call it a fair trade.
I think it was fair.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's
I mean, fine. I think
the fleecing is that they're going to give that kid $100 million to be their left tackle. And I'm not convinced that he's going to be an 8-year left tackle for a 3-time champion Kansas City Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes. He's the only place they could have dealt him where he'd have a better chance to win was there.
Yeah, fair enough. But
so
I'd also
say happy. I mean, it looks like they really like the kid for dealing him into a situation like that. But then there's the part of it like you have to go beat them and we've never beat them. And if they really felt like he was Ray Lewis, they wouldn't have dealt him there. I mean, we're not going to send you to the Chiefs. We'll suck it up. We'll take a third and you'll play right tackle, kid.
Then that would be a bad idea. I thought you meant trade him somewhere else for a third round pick. Then I would have said that's a bad deal.
No, we'll keep you and we'll play your game.
Yeah,
we're a diminished team by dealing you, Zeus. Eric DaCosta is not waking up today feeling diminished by getting rid of a malcontent right tackle who thinks he's a left tackle, who wants $150 million, and went out on the internet and asked out, and goodbye. And that's how I felt about it Friday at 5:00. And
fair enough.
There's no that is business. The business was you're a left tackle. You want money. You want off my championship football team. You don't want to play with Lamar Jackson. Goodbye. See ya.
We'll trade you to the championship team that keeps beating
and let
us.
Them overpay you. We'll come beat your ass in January.
Okay. Fair enough.
That's the way I would feel.
Fair enough. I mean, I don't, generally speaking, I don't disagree with too much what you said. I think the malcontent thing is, I think you're overplaying that a little bit too much, but overall the rest of it, fine. Fair enough. And to be very clear, now this is where I will go into why you do not even why you make the trade, because he's still incredibly valuable to you. I am not comfortable with their right tackle situation right now. If they figure out
a way, they don't. You know what I mean? They're not playing Thursday night. They're drafting Thursday.
Well, but 4 days ago, 5 days ago, a week ago, they had Orlando Brown there,
and they have 4-5 left right tackles, and say we're going to get that kid and. You know,
and they need edge rushers and they need another wide receiver. So they've added another need to the, and what about interior offensive line? Does that become more important now because you don't have a bookend offensive tackles anymore?
Well, they're talking Bradley Bozeman at center. I don't know if they believe it or not. If they really believe that, then that's
but who plays guard then?
Situation.
But who plays guard though? That's my question. And Bradley Bozeman's a free agent after this year. So, you know, hey, I don't dislike draft picks. I want to be very clear about this. I just, for some of the reaction, it's something that I see a lot, not with Ravens fans or Ravens pundits, just in general, when you see players that are traded that are going to be a free agent, they're going into a contract year. I just feel at times we completely blow past the actual value of, even if Orlando Brown walks at the end of 2021, he might still improve your chances on helping you win a Super Bowl in 2021. Even well, if he
leaves,
he's also
playing for money too.
Sure,
He's playing angry, as
right.
they say.
So,
right.
So yeah, and there's different ways to look at that. Is he a malcontent or is he really motivated? And he says, you know what? I'm not going to play left tackle, but I played it last year. And by the way, Lane Johnson in Philadelphia got big money as a right tackle a few years back. And he was kind of projected to be a left tackle when the Eagles originally paid him. And then he ended up staying at right tackle. The point is, if he played at a high level in Baltimore, even at right tackle, he was going to get big money from someone next offseason to play left tackle. It just so happened the Chiefs valued him enough where they said, hey, we're gonna acquire him. We'll try to work out a long-term deal. Obviously, they'll use the franchise tag if it comes to that. I mean, I would assume. I think Adam Schefter reported that at some point Friday evening, or someone did. But you know,
well,
clearly
that would be the
next
question
him.
Once you clear out a draft and move right. things around is like, you're not renting him.
Sure, sure. But so that part of the argument aside, as far as what wanting to remember that him playing for you in 2021 still brings plenty of value, especially in a year Ronnie Stanley's coming back from injury. I do agree with you on the interesting question of how does Orlando Brown or any Ravens offensive lineman, you know, whether we're talking about Matt Skura being in Miami now or whoever you want to talk about, you know, DJ Fluker or whoever it is going elsewhere. There is that very fascinating question as far as Lamar Jackson and this offensive system. What impact does it have on the offensive lineman? You know, it's kind of that chicken or the egg thing, right? I mean, you know, you can talk, go back and forth on it all you want, but there is an interesting question as far as what level does he, you know, at what level does he play in a
well, there was
more,
the Ray Lewis factor on defenses, right?
Sure, right. I mean, Ed Hartwell and Bart's, you know, go down the list. I mean, so many different guys on the D line elsewhere, you know, all over the defense. So that's, so that is a very real question. And to be very clear, this wasn't me saying that if Orlando Brown had a change of heart, that suddenly I'm saying, yeah, pay him $20 million a year to stay and be your right tackle. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying in terms of what the short-term value you are giving up in exchange for hypothetical long-term value, because everyone loves their draft picks until they realize that, maybe you didn't hit on the guy. Not saying the Ravens won't hit on them. And I like the idea of having two top 31 picks. You know, in fact, you know, we haven't gotten into it, but you know, I've seen a lot of people already talk about, oh, they could trade one of those picks and move back into the second round or pick up a couple or early day three picks. You know, I kind of like the idea of two first round picks because of what that fifth year option. And we talked about that so much when the Ravens moved up to 32nd overall 3 years ago to get Lamar Jackson. Could they have stayed put in the second round and maybe moved up and gotten them then? Quite possibly. But that fifth year option ends up being pretty important, especially in a quarterback situation, of course, but for any good player in the first round, you love having that fifth year option. So that's where I kind of look at this and say, okay, you didn't get Orlando Brown you didn't get a first round pick for Orlando Brown straight up in the way that I would have liked to have seen. Clearly that deal never came to fruition with Kansas City or anyone else. So live and learn. That's fine. But you do get into a position where you have those two first round picks late in that first round. I don't want to, not saying the Ravens, just in general, you don't want to go too much quantity oriented compared to quality, because they do need a right tackle. Even if Villanueva comes in or Dennis Kelly comes in, say they start, let's say they start for the entire year. Well, what are you doing then? I mean, these aren't long-term solutions. I mean, Villanueva is 32, 33 years old. You know, Kelly just got cut by the Titans. So, you know, he's
well,
a guy who's
on the other side of 30.
Yeah. Yeah. So they need a long-term solution either way. Right. I mean, even if you say one of those veteran guys, you sign them and one of them's going to start at right tackle, you know, whichever one you sign, you still need a long-term answer there. And as you mentioned, Kevin Zeitler, wrong side of 30, he can still play for a couple more years. It's not as though he's one and done or anything like that. Bradley Bozeman, whether he's playing left guard or center, he's going to be a free agent after this year. What are you going to do with him? Do you commit to him? Which probably isn't a lucrative deal or anything like that, but you're going to have to pay him something. So you have a question there. Whichever spot he doesn't play, who's playing there? Is it Ben Powers? Is it Ben Bredesen? Is it Tyree Phillips? I mean, you have options, but no one that you can say definitively you know is going to lock down that job. So you still have questions there. So I like the idea of whichever, you know, whoever it ends up being. Now, let's say they take an offensive tackle, Tevin Jenkins, and Gregory Rousseau or Jason Owe or whoever at edge rusher with that other first round pick. Those are two spots that align nicely with this draft in terms of, you know, kind of, you know, offensive tackle. The first three guys, you know, Sewell, Rashawn Slater, Darisaw from Virginia Tech, those guys are going to be long gone by the time the Ravens pick. But, you know, if Tevin Jenkins, and I don't know, maybe you offer a day three pick and you can move up a couple spots, something like that. Or maybe he falls to you. Who knows? I mean, I think there's some interesting wild cards with, you know, someone like Trey Lance in that draft and some of the dominoes that could fall depending on, you know, which teams take quarterbacks. It's always about the quarterbacks, right? Even for the teams, it's not about a quarterback. But, you know, I like the idea of if you are going to give up Orlando Brown, give up 2021 Orlando Brown, you get the picks. That's great. I like the idea of, okay, if you're confident you can find his replacement, get him in the first round where that's a guy that's locked up. Then potentially if he's a quality player, you know, he's locked up for the next 5 years. And then you're in a good position still with Ronnie Stanley on the other side. So again, let's be very clear.
Are all things that Eric and the staff is way ahead of us on in making this deal into the first round with firepower to still move up and get a blue chip player. I mean, there's just all sorts of possibilities here for what they like. And again, I've talked to a lot of draft people here this week, and you can check that out at Baltimore Positive. The one thing that everyone has alluded to is what a strange draft it is from not having tape on players, the continuity of the Ravens staff, probably identifying players at a higher level than a lot of other organizations can, and maybe being able to really make this a stronger draft than even they're used to.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting in that way. I mean, for the Ravens, for any team, I mean, you have so many more gaps this year. I mean, from scouts not being able to do as much in-person work, even though you hear Joe Ortiz, you heard Eric DaCosta at the pre-draft press conference. Yeah, they were able to have extensive Zoom meetings with prospects. So in some ways, it might even be better than, you know, those throwaway 15-minute sessions at the combine that they'd have with prospects before the pandemic. So I think some of that stuff you'll end up seeing changing, you know, for many teams, their perspective for the better. But there's still gaps, you know, with guys who opted out. I mean, you're talking about some of the best players in this draft. I mean, look at Micah Parsons from Penn State, you know, a guy who I wouldn't be surprised if he snuck in the top 10, but I certainly expect him to be a top half of the first round guy. He didn't play last year. You know, look at some of the other opt-out guys. I mean, you're talking about top flight talent in this draft who didn't play last year, and that's fine. I'm not judging that decision whatsoever for obvious reasons, even under just normal circumstances from a business standpoint, let alone talking about a pandemic. But if you're a talent evaluator, how do you navigate that? How do you know what that guy has been up to for the last, 18 months since they played any real football? I mean, that's a long time. You know, that's talking about a guy that suffered a season-ending injury during minicamp and missed the entire year. So
especially when they're 20 and trying to get better.
Yeah. So I think there's just a lot of volatility in that way. And maybe that's another argument. I mean, I guess you could look at that one of two ways. You could say that's an argument to trade back a little bit more and pick up extra lottery tickets, or do you feel more confident in how you've ranked your top 40 prospects rather than getting down into 70, 75, top 100? And then I think beyond the top 100, 125, you'll probably see teams have so many different, I mean, it always kind of deviates once you get beyond the first three rounds or so. You'll see teams go in different directions and you'll see the pundits had a fourth round grade on a guy.
This is where the Ravens have a unique offense and some unique needs in the way that they play, that they're going to value certainly wide receivers differently and H-backs and tight ends and probably offensive linemen that run block instead of pass block. Like, there's going to be a different valuation on that allows them, quite frankly, I think they have a market advantage to some degree. There's going to be somebody out there's a fifth or sixth round wide receiver that is more attractive to the Ravens than he is to another organization.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's the best example, because other teams would say, well, you can have the blocking wide receiver, you know, but your point is well taken. And look, I mean, we know they're not going to hit on every pick. I mean,
they're really good blocking wide receiver. You can do things here.
elsewhere, that you want to know if that guy's going to make plays in the passing game. And to be clear, the Ravens need guys that can make plays in the passing game still.
I still think Willie Snead was overpaid. I want to say that on the record. But
yeah. What? Where?
Willie Snead here.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Just sort of for what they wanted him to do. But like that kind of player is exactly the kind of player that would be there in the fifth round that somebody else would say, I don't want that player. And the Ravens say, give me that player.
Although keep in mind, they signed him when Joe Flacco was still the quarterback here.
Understood.
So, yeah, sure. So, I mean, but it's going to be really interesting in that way. And I mean, even going back to what we were talking about with the offensive line, with not knowing what OTAs are going to look like. It's one thing for the union to these teams have put out the statements, and look, that's fine. Even though I think so much of this is about the 17 game schedule and other elements much more than even the pandemic at this point. I mean, the players just went through a whole season with the pandemic, and now you're talking about guys having the opportunity to be vaccinated. I don't think that's the core issue here nearly as much as the union seeing this as an opportunity to push back. And why not push back on it? They've let the league get the better of them for decades. So I don't have any problem with that. But it's one thing to talk about Kevin Zeitler or Calais Campbell or Brandon Williams or Derek Wolfe or guys who are comfortably established in this league, or even third, fourth, fifth year players who are established in this league. Tyus Bowser, who just got paid. He's established now, right? He's not playing for a contract. He's going to be a starter. It's way different for those guys to say, I'm going to take a stand, compared to, or even guys who have workout bonuses where they say, you know what, I'll be a team player here and I'll forego that. It's way different for them than for whoever the Ravens draft in the fourth round, who's going to be trying to carve out a role, or whoever the Ravens draft in the sixth round, who's going to be trying to make the team, or Geno Stone, who they re-signed in the offseason, who was a seventh round pick last year, who's been cut already. Way different for those guys to not be there for spring workouts. And, you know, it's not even so much a union or anti-union thing. It's your livelihood's on the line. You know, it's one thing to say you're a strong union guy, but if you can't play, you're going to be gone. And guess what? The union's not going to do anything for you then. They can't. So that's where it will be really interesting, not just for this year's class, but I think even the guys last year. As much as we talked about the 2020 season overall in its totality being a quality season, couple hiccups aside, obviously the Ravens pandemic outbreak game against Pittsburgh, Denver not having a quarterback, you could count those examples on one hand and have fingers left over compared to the season being quite normal from a quality of play standpoint. But those draft picks from last year, that 2020 draft class of players, and even the rookie free agents, I think those guys having some semblance of an offseason program, the rookies having an off-season program. And again, whatever it looks like, who knows? I mean, they're still ironing it out. And it's going to be probably a very disjointed type of activity between now and mid-June, whenever, you know, when they're supposed to have mandatory minicamp. But that's where I think it will be interesting to see a Tyree Phillips. Does he make a jump? You know, does a Ben Bredesen make a jump and go from a guy who was a healthy scratch every week to being a guy who maybe competes to be the left guard if Bozeman moves to center?
How about Devin Duvernay?
Yeah, sure. I haven't written off Devin Duvernay at all. But at the same time, you can't just automatically assume he's going to work out either. I mean, that's how this works. All of these players are assets that you're betting on, right? I mean, that's what it comes down to. You're making bets on guys based on their contract status and their age and their physical tools and coming off of injuries and things of that nature. So
and once they're worth a damn, they make two Pro Bowls, they want to be traded to.
Yeah, sure. So you know, I mean, it's going to be very fascinating in that way. And that's not a Ravens thing. That's an NFL league-wide thing. And I think, but I do think, and this is where I do have some concern about waving bye-bye to Orlando Brown. We talk so much at the end of the season of the offensive line. It needs to be better. Okay, you bring in Kevin Zeitler. Great. But then you just traded away a Pro Bowl caliber right tackle who's been to two Pro Bowls. So that you better hit on that, because again, I'm not buying just saying Al Villanueva is going to come in and you're going to be fine there. And I've seen some people say, well, they ran the ball really well with DJ Fluker and Tyree Phillips at right tackle. Well, what's the objective here? Is it to be what you were last year, or is it to progress? Is it to take the next step? And that's where I kind of go back to what I had mentioned about, you know, how we've talked about wide receiver, how we've talked about the offensive line, where, you know, you want to be careful that you're not finding creative ways to continue treading water. And I'm not saying the Ravens are doing that or will do that, but that's where there is some legitimate risk in saying goodbye to Orlando Brown, because let's face it, when you lose Ronnie Stanley in week 8 last year, and you consider the challenges they had on the offensive line, and you lose Nick Boyle, who's so important for their blocking as well, you can make an easy argument that Orlando Brown was their second most valuable player on offense last year, behind Lamar Jackson, obviously. I mean, how important was it for him to step into left tackle and play at a high level? You know, so we can debate whether that was how much of that system, how much of that is, you know, whatever it is.
Or if Stanley doesn't get hurt, whether Orlando Brown's still here and we don't have the 31st.
And that's a fair question too. Sure. Yeah. I mean, that think about that butterfly effect of him hurting his ankle. I mean, that might be why he's no longer in Baltimore. He's probably not making the same demand if he filled in against Washington at left tackle because Stanley had, I think it was a shoulder issue, something like that. Missed one game. I'm guessing he's not making a trade request based off of one game in that scenario. So that I'm really glad you brought that up, because it really is kind of that butterfly effect right there, that Ronnie Stanley gets hurt, Orlando Brown plays left tackle, plays it at a high level. We can debate, you know, whether he's top five caliber or not. He played at a high level. He did. I mean, he was really good there. But what kind of impact that then has on him requesting a trade, what impact that has on him as a free agent, you know, as far as negotiations with Kansas City or hitting the market, you know, at the end of 2021. So it's interesting in that way. But again, you can say, you know, you can trade them. You can say it's fair value. You can even say the Ravens won the trade. Well, they got to hit on a right tackle. If not, then you're going to look at it and say, that's a missed opportunity. Even if you'd say, yeah, he wasn't going to be back anyway after 2021, still value to him playing for you this year, especially with Stanley coming off the serious injury.
He is Baltimore Luke, and Luke at WNST.net. You can find him anywhere the internet is served right on up till Thursday. I think the Ravens are done dealing, but you never know. We will be on alert for Eric DaCosta, Trader Eric, as we're now calling him. All of our WNST coverage can be enjoyed even further with a little Rofo chicken and some Western fries. Stop by for some coffee. Start your day there as well. Real fresh, real fast. We gassed up over the weekend, and I'm all gassed up, ready for an NFL draft this week. All of our WNST sports coverage can be found now at Baltimore Positive. If you're back for a draft time around here, Peter King, Jeff Zrebeck, I've had Brent Zableski, John Eisenberg, lots of folks talking draft. Mike Tenier from Bleacher Report as well out at Baltimore Positive. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, the Wise Conversations, and Baltimore Positive.